Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report with your host, Brittany Broski.
Actually, let me take it from the top and I'm going to go minion mode. Okay. And I've also been trying to work on my Alvador the Chipmunks impression. So I'll do that. I'll do that as the second iteration afterward.
Ba 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 na 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 ba 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 na na. Pa boy.
That's the minion version. Okay. And it's just a little, you know, because I didn't warm up. I didn't warm up my throat. I didn't lubricate my throat to do a minion impression this goddamn early in the morning, 10 a.m. That was the minion version. We're also working with a... The fuck was that? What? That was an error. Something just happened on the motherboard. The motherboard short-circuited. Mama, the motherboard had a... Mama, the motherboard got a cunt virus and crashed! But they wouldn't say yeah, would they? What's something that because the Olympic ceremony, the Olymp. Oh my fucking God! Slow down! Slow your roll! Microphone's not going anywhere. Microphone's not running off. You don't have to catch you by the tail, girl. My God! And this microphone probably stinks. I'm not sitting over here sniffing it, but my Lord, it's absorbed some shit over the years. You know what I mean? Y'all, we've been doing this podcast for damn near 3 years now. This is the third year of the Broski Report. We launched it in 2023. Wait, 2023. Bruh. Hashtag bruh. Guys, everyone comment hashtag bruh. Because that is a major bruh moment, but in a positive sense. It's a bruh accomplishment. I cannot believe y'all have been rocked with me for 3 years. What the fuck have I ever said? But you know what? Apparently some good stuff, because apparently you get something out of it. I think the most you can get out of this podcast is some escape, maybe some validation, maybe a little book club, maybe some like candle and fragrance recommendations. Whatever else you guys get from it, that's up to you. That's up to viewer discretion and viewer preference. So if all I am to you is a extremely aggressively pale face, kind of just making noise, I can do that. Okay. I can do that. And I have reached a new level of pale that they're calling clinically pale. And it's not terminal, thank God, but it is debilitating. It is debilitating. I can't go in the sun. The sunlight burns me. It sears my skin. Similar to when you hold a steak in tongs and you hold it against the cast iron skillet and it makes that noise. That's kind of what my skin does when I'm on the beach, when I'm in exposed sunlight for, you know, over 30 minutes. Over 30 minutes in the direct sun, I'm red. I'm doing Larry the Lobster. Okay, guys. Winter Olympics. It is the damn Winter Olympics. I don't know the first damn thing about the Winter Olympics. I love ice skating. I used to think that that was really going to be, I don't know what that phase is for a lot of young girls. It's like, okay, I'm going to be a marine biologist, obviously. And if that doesn't work, then I guess I'll have to be an ice skater. Like, I remember having that thought process. Like, obviously I'm going to be with the dolphins. It's where I belong. They need me. They need me in the lab. They need me. And then my dad one time like shattered my dreams because he was like, you know, if you're a marine biologist, you'll probably have to like go underwater. And I had issues with my ears, like my ENT. I used to have tubes in my ears. So I can't, to this day, I can't go deep in the water. You know, like the girls used to show off. They used to swim to the bottom of the pool and retrieve those fucking, the weights, the toys that had a weight in it where you would throw it and you'd have to just swim to the bottom of the pool, grab it and bring it up. And whoever could do that first would win. I could never do that. I said, y'all going to have to count me out because I'm dealing with something that is, you know, we're not exactly sure what it is. The doctors are not exactly sure what it is. It's just tubes. I just had like balance issues in my ears. Actually, I don't know what tubes were for. I would get ear infections all the time. What do tubes do? Is it something to do with like the little goblin in your ear that he's like mixing potions, alchemy? He's like, the inner ear balance. Yes, it's in my hands. It's all in my hands. The goblin that was in the inside of my ear, of my ear canal, he was drunk. It was a liquor problem. He was on the bottle. And what am I supposed to do as a child? And then this carried me into, it followed me into high school. What are you supposed to do? What is a tube in your ear? Tube in your throat. The tube connecting the... No. Tubes in your ears called. Ear tubes, typically placed by surgeons to treat chronic ear infections or fluid buildup, are officially called tympanostomy tubes. They are commonly referred to as meringotomy tubes, pressure equalization tubes, or ventilation tubes, or simply grommets. Jeez, grommets! I've got fucking Wallace and Gromit in my ear, bruh. Stupid. Jeez, grommets! That's just earwax, bro. You're in my ear. I don't know why I had these so young, and I don't know why. Oh, one of the most common safe childhood surgeries often performed on children aged 1 to 3. Short-term tubes stay in for 6 to 18 months, while long-term tubes can last for several years. When I was in high school, I had my final tube taken out. And I don't know, like in high school, I still had tubes in my ears. I don't know what the fuck. But to this day, when I, maybe it's a bit of trauma. I can't go less than like 2 feet down in the water or more than 2 feet down in the water because I genuinely freak out. I'm like, my fucking brain's filling with water. My brain's filling with water. And it's going to be like in one of those embalming jars in a Victorian science lab where they're like, this was the brain of a white girl. They shake it around. They shake it around and it cracks apart. It sinks to the bottom of the jar. My brain is Caucasian and pale. Bruh. They bleached my brain. Okay, now let's talk about it. What the hell? What does an ear tube look like? Guys, just indulge me. Whoa, it's like a piece of plastic. They resemble miniature spools or grommets, usually no larger than a grain of rice or the head of a pen. That's amazing. When they had to... Don't look that up. Don't look that up. Don't look it up. Don't look it up. All right. Ew, don't look it up. Okay, let me move on. Sorry, I woke up. Okay, here's something that I really wanted to tell you guys today. Green Chattin' Peaky Blinders song. 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 Green Chattin' Peaky Blinders song.
Green Chattin' did a song for the soundtrack of the Peaky Blinders movie, The Immortal Man. Yeah! Okay? So no one here gives a fuck except me, I guess?
Guys, it's great.
How does it feel to be a freak among the freaks?
And then it builds to this shit in the end.
And then there's no...
Guys, I love it, and it's creepy, and it gives... Because if you know, you know. I don't have to explain Peaky Blinders to the bitches that get it. And if you've never seen Peaky Blinders, if you don't think you'll be into it, fine. Fine. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, you just have to. If it's not calling to you, then don't answer the call. Okay. And I feel similarly about Game of Thrones, even though I think everyone should watch Game of Thrones just for like to enjoy it. If that's not your thing, then don't do it. Like, I'm not going to be that annoying person. Like, you have to, you have to, you have to. If like 1920s Birmingham, England is not calling to you exactly. And like, organized crime, then just forget it. Like, that's actually not, I'm gonna gatekeep Peaky Blinders. One of the most successful TV shows ever. I'm gonna gatekeep Peaky Blinders because I don't think y'all are ready for it. With all that said, I was a bit skeptical. I will be honest. I was a bit skeptical about, they were like, they're making a movie. Because at the end of season 6, not to ruin it if you haven't seen it, but what the fuck else can you take from this dude? I mean, Tommy Shelby has been through the damn ringer. You bitches have put him in and through the ringer. Now let's make a movie. Oh, you got something else for him. Oh my God. Leave him alone. Leave him alone. Anyway, I'm very excited for the movie because some of these trailers I'm seeing, I'm like, you know what? Hell yeah. We're so back. So I'm very excited for that. The soundtrack, I don't know if the full soundtrack has been released or if they're just doing it song by song, because guess what? Puppet by Green Chatton, Anthony Ginn, and Martin Slattery is fantastic. And I'm really rocking with it. See, I don't know if it's Peaky Blinders. Take a little walk on the edge of the down by the. No, I don't want the. Ooh. Oh, Anthony Ginn did all the Peaky Blinders stuff. Red Right Hand, No Heaven, No Hell, Lucy in Tommy's Office. Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. Oh, bitch, it's not out yet. It comes out in 12 days. Now they're releasing. Hello? My God, slow down. What is the rush? Because I know you bitches put this in 2X anyway. The Peaky Blinders soundtrack is coming out on the same day as Harry's new album. Okay? I'm going to be transferring back and forth between the two. Okay, I'm going to be doing an aperture, let's the light and take a little walk by the edge of. I love Peaky Blinders. And I don't know what it is about that kind of storytelling that I'm just like, I'll watch the whole season in one night, but then I can't watch a movie. I'll be like, that movie was just too damn long. I couldn't sit through it. It's 2.5 hours, but I will watch, y'all. I'm currently binging Gossip Girl, like the OG Gossip Girl. I'm on season 2, early season 3. I don't think I ever finished it because this show is just unrelenting. And we have to talk about Night of the Seven Kingdoms! We have to talk about Night of the Seven Kingdoms. I have no... Okay. Let me actually talk about Gossip Girl and then I'll get into Night of the Seven Kingdoms because, like, oh my fucking God. Gossip Girl to me is, I was just craving some tea and I was like, I am done. I used to watch tea channels on YouTube, okay? And then I got to this phase where I was like, y'all genuinely have nothing better to do and you are monetizing other people's suffering or other people's rage bait. And so, like, either way, you're the fool. And then I started to feel like the fool because I'm like, why do I give a fuck about this? Like, I genuinely don't. There are so many other things that I'm focused on and I'm doing and that I care about that it's like, why am I sitting around watching tea channels? And if that's what I'm craving is drama, then let me watch a TV show. And so I was like, maybe I should go watch Gossip Girl. And I was like, you know what? My personal style has really developed since high school, but there still are things that I'm like, God, it's just good. And that's the kind of preppy, I like preppy with a bit of an edge or with a bit of like a British twist or like a masculine twist or a country twist, but like all of these things blended together and obviously whimsical as the number one descriptor. Going back and watching Gossip Girl, Blair Waldorf, bitch, they had her dressed. And was she part of the reason why I dressed like a, you know, 65-year-old woman when I was in high school? Yeah. Because I didn't understand that it's like, oh, she dresses like that because she's from the Upper East Side. And she's wearing shit from Barney's and Bendel's. Me, I was actually not doing that. I was just dressing like I was there to teach the class. I was wearing like 4-inch heel Clark's ankle booties, a pencil skirt, tights, a blouse, and a trench coat to school. Like, that's actually what I was doing. I was wearing headbands. I was primping and crimping and straightening my hair every fucking... I had this cunty bob in high school. Like, bitch, I really thought I was the girl giving it to them. Like, I was the girl. And then I look back on pictures and I'm like, why couldn't you have just worn a t-shirt? Like, what? 7 a.m. on the bus, high heels, polka dot pencil skirt. Okay. And this was also the era of like Eleanor Calder. That was her name, Eleanor Calder, Louis Tomlinson's ex-girlfriend. And she used to dress in those cunty, like, sleeveless, button-up shirts. You know the ones I'm talking about. Put it up here. I used to wear that. And then I used to wear Keds, because Keds were in for some reason, like those, the nurse shoes. And then on top of all that, I was doing 1950s makeup, because I also was in the phase of I loved the 50s. Like, I was discovering Elvis and Marilyn Monroe and the Beatles. I was a big, the Beatles were a huge influence on why I dressed like that too. Because I was like, are you a Marlboro rocker? Like, I was really in that shit. Exiting the 50s, early 60s. Then I started to do my hair kind of all teased up. I used to draw on, and this was like into college, by the way. I used to draw on lower lashes, like Twiggy. Bitch, you couldn't tell me shit. I have always loved to play. One thing about me, I love to play. And you should never stop playing, by the way. I have a Pinterest board that I saved recently. It's called Makeup Inspo. And because I've been trying to, I'm ready to switch up my look, okay? I tried the 1930s thing for a second. There are still parts of that that I keep, but like, I think that's more, I want to do that for a carpet, or I want to do that for like a shoot or an editorial something. My day to day, I'm thinking about switching up the colors because I changed up my hair. I'm doing a cool tone makeup. Now I want to switch into kind of rosy, okay? Like a rosy cool tone gray, well blended white eyelid, like white shadow on the eyelid. And get rid of the black liner that I do, okay? I think this is something that, expect this from me in the next 4 to 6 weeks. I'm going to be experimenting, okay? So that is kind of where I'm headed now, but I love to play. I love to play. And the thing about this job is every time it feels like I do my makeup, it's because I'm recording something. And so now all of my phases and all of my play is being recorded forever to live on the internet. And you know what? Whatever. Like, whatever. Life is finite. Time is fleeting. Like, whatever. Sure. If, oh, I did my makeup bad and it's on the internet forever. Whatever. I'm trying to have that approach to everything I do in life. Like, girl, who gives a fuck? And maybe people do give a fuck, but like, let's move on. You want to know something that keeps me up at night that I'll just go ahead and share in the wake of that statement? I had Marcus Mumford on the show, obviously, and he's the one that had given me this candle. Amen. And thank you, Marcus, because I love this damn candle.
This episode of the Broski Report is brought to you by Squarespace. If tiny ear tubes can keep a childhood story interesting, imagine what a clear website can do for your ideas. Squarespace gives creators and small businesses the tools to build a polished online home with Blueprint AI or templates, plus easy drag and drop editing. Need to offer services? Squarespace brings websites, invoices, online payments, appointment scheduling, and email marketing together in one place. Built-in SEO tools also help people find your site through search, with features like meta descriptions and an auto-generated sitemap. Squarespace Domains helps you find a business name with privacy and security included at one fair, all-inclusive price. Turn your next obsession, project, or side hustle into a place people can find and follow. Head to squarespace.com/launch for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code LAUNCH to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
I told him that I have a Deering banjo, which I do, and I have played many a time on TikTok and wherever when I don't have nails, okay? I've learned Boil That Cabbage Down. I learned the shit from, what's the scary movie? Deliverance, okay? I learned those, and I practiced them. I was nervous in the moment because, number one, I have acrylic nails. I can't do that shit, okay? You can't play the banjo with acrylic nails. Number two, Marcus Mumford sitting next to me, okay? Like, there's a turd in my underwear. Number three, forgot it because I was nervous. Forgot everything that I've ever played, everything I've ever learned on the banjo. And so he goes, yeah, let's hear it. And the minute I held it, I was like, I don't know. I held it. I said, I don't know how to play a banjo. I've never played the banjo. So let me go ahead and just hand this back to you. And then he goes, all right, that's enough. I said, that objectively fucking hilarious and he got my ass. Also objectively, I'm humiliated. So I lay in bed at night thinking about that. And I also lay in bed at night thinking about this moment on Royal Court where I had a guest on and I will not tell you who it is. I will never tell you who it is. But I had a guest on and I was so nervous. And I don't really get nervous anymore, which is crazy. Unless it's like Green Chat and Peaky Blinders. Like, I can't. I had a guest on and we were talking and I brought up a project that he was in. And I said, I loved this movie. I know it didn't do well. I know people didn't really care for it. But I loved this movie. I think you were great in it. And he goes, what? What? Oh, I didn't know people didn't like that movie. Oh, I'm humiliated. Why did I say that? Why would you say that, by the way? Hey, what would ever prompt you to say that? Hey, that shit you made, that shit you starred in, no one watched it. Yeah. No one's ever heard of it. But me, I did. I watched it. Only because I was prepping for your episode. Like, why did I do that? And of course, it got cut out. But like, why? When Marcus Mumford handed me the banjo and I said, time to humiliate myself. Sometimes it is time to humiliate yourself. And it makes you better. Because you'll never do that shit again. At least that specific thing. Okay? And it teaches you about yourself. And I think that's beautiful. I'm pre-saving the Peaky Blinders Immortal Man soundtrack. So thank you so much. Okay, guys, let's talk about Night of the Seven Kingdoms. This show is some of the best television I have seen in so long. So long. Night of the Seven... And now I'm, like, back in the world, too, because also House of the Dragon premieres in June. The trailer just dropped. This show and this universe is just the gift that keeps on giving. And I keep getting all these, like... infographics that just scared the fuck out of me. Did you see that? I thought there was a roach on me. I keep getting infographics about who Egg is and like down the lineage, down the line. And it's so interesting because like you think of these characters as, I guess, kind of two-dimensional. Like, they serve a purpose in this specific storyline. But what I love about Game of Thrones is everything is so well thought out. It is so well planned. And everything is intentional. And when you create a story like Night of the Seven Kingdoms, which I've heard that they're going to milk for however many seasons they want, go ahead. I'll be sat for every single fucking one. Just felt a chin here. I have to go pluck my chin hairs. Where are the chin hair girls? Raise your hands. Put them down. I love going back into this world and existing as not only like a spectator, but also you feel the depth of the relationship between Dunk and Egg. And it's only been 5 episodes and they're 30-minute episodes. It's like, that's such a feat. And the dialogue is so good. And in this 5th episode, bitch. Oh my God. That is the storytelling I'm talking about. When was the last time? I think we're in this age too of so many TV shows. The showrunners and the people who greenlight these shows know that it's probably on in the background. You're putting the shit on in the background while you are on your phone. And because they know that, they almost make it a point in the writing or at the top of every episode to like, every single scene, they're calling the characters by their name at the beginning of a sentence, or they're giving the exposition, the narrative through the conversation instead of like actual creative storytelling. You know, it's like, oh no, you're going to get back together with him after he cheated on you? It's like, why did you have to say, that's not how two friends would talk about something as sensitive as that. You know what I mean? It's like, such lazy, stupid, brainless writing. However, there is a market for that. And I understand wanting to watch a show where you can just turn your brain off and just, it's light watching. The type of television I gravitate towards is something that is incredibly heavy, incredibly dark, and has this kind of lead character that through all the morally gray areas we see of this character, you still want to root for them. And that's kind of something in both Peaky Blinders and Narcos and any character in Game of Thrones, any character in House of the Dragon. I mean, the way that they paint these people is so honest because it's not perfect and it's not with the goal of being relatable. They are telling these stories because they're interesting and they matter, you know? And I want to see incredible acting and I want to see the fruit of an incredible casting. Like, these shows are just, you know, versus some other shows where you can just insert whoever and they can, anyone could play that role. Like, these shows, bruh. Shout out the casting directors, because wow. Anyway, Night of the Seven Kingdoms. This, and I'm going to kind of talk spoilers, so skip ahead if you're not watching or if you are watching and you, whatever. This episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Every friend group has someone who insists on doing things the hard way. Maybe they're a Taurus. Maybe they're vindictive. Maybe they're stubborn. Maybe they can't help it. I don't know. You need to probably have an intervention with them. Okay? I don't know. This is your friend, not mine. Don't involve me. Or every friend group might have that one who's somehow still overpaying for wireless in 2026. Well, Mint Mobile is here to help with that last one. I don't know about the first one. That's on y'all. Stop paying way too much for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Same coverage, same speed, just without the inflated price tag. The premium wireless you expect. Unlimited talk, text, and data, but at a fraction of what others charge. And for a limited time, get 50% off 3, 6, or 12-month plans of unlimited premium wireless. Bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle. With a 7-day money-back guarantee and customer satisfaction ratings in the mid-90s, Mint makes it easy to try it and see why people don't go back. Ready to stop paying more than you have to? New customers can make the switch today. And for a limited time, get unlimited premium wireless for just $15 a month. Switch now at mintmobile.com/broski. That's mintmobile.com/broski. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for a 12-month plan required. $15 a month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only. Over 50 gigabyte may slow when network is busy. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. Additional terms apply. See mintmobile.com. This episode is sponsored by Boll & Branch. Y'all, I'm turning 29 this year. It ain't no joke anymore. I'm in a stage of life where rest isn't optional anymore. It determines if I'm going to have a good week. It determines if I'm going to have an optimistic fervor for life. This isn't about trends or quick fixes. It's about choosing comfort that lasts because everyone deserves to sleep comfortably. Boll & Branch sheets are made for moments of unmatched comfort. They're breathable, incredibly soft, and designed to get better over time, just like the way you think about rest now. This is sleep you don't compromise on. I've tried out Boll & Branch, and they really are so super soft, and they get softer over time. And I'm very particular about how I sleep, and I like these because I don't overheat, and I'm usually a sweater. Sleep soundly with Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order plus free shipping at bollandbranch.com/broski with code broski. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com/broski. Code broski to unlock 15% off. Exclusions apply. The way that they did a flashback to his childhood, and by the way, the actor who plays young Dunk perfectly nailed all of his mannerisms, his cadence. Like, that is so... That's what I'm talking about! Television is back, bitch! That is what I'm talking about. Like, I believe every word that comes out of every character's mouth. I believe the high stakes. I believe we are in Flea Bottom. I believe everything. And there's such an immersive quality to following these characters, mind you, through places that we've seen in Game of Thrones, we've seen in, you know, House of the Dragon as a kind of when they parade the prince's body through and the dead dragon through Flea Bottom, through King's Landing. like, we've seen these set design as a background when the main thing is, you know, our characters, our Targaryens. But now, these no-names, completely, like, you are immersed in the world, how nasty and gritty and cutthroat and brutal it is. Where sometimes it's like, okay, I expect that from the royals. I expect that from these pompous, inbred, you know, fucking entitled narcissists who sit on the throne and pass it down. But the people who live, there's this amazing scene where young Dunk and Rafe are sitting somewhere and they have this conversation of like, you know, we're hustling to make money to get out of Flea Bottom and to go to the free cities and go wherever. But I've heard some pretty terrifying things about the free cities. What if, and this is a real, you know, question, what if there's nothing better than this? And like, what a real conversation between two young people, two young orphans who were thrust into that brutal world. And they still, Dunk especially, is holding on to his innocence. And it's almost so disturbing and hard to watch that innocence be grated away at. But he has kept this kind of morally upright, you know better. Where sometimes you see, it's almost become the custom in Game of Thrones where they'll succumb eventually. Every single character has a bad quality. Every single character has selfish impulses or acts out in a way where they thought they were doing the best thing. That's why also I'll recommend Red Rising until I'm blue in the face. The character writing in Red Rising is some of the, it rivals some of George R. R. Martin's stuff for me. And mind you, I've never read Lord of the Rings. Mind you, I've never read it. I will. Okay, I will. And I'm also going to do a movie marathon and it's going to be a whole, I'm committing to Lord of the Rings because I feel like I'm missing out. And I also know that ACOTAR and Sarah J. Maas really, unfortunately, kind of rips off a lot. This is what I've heard. Okay, you know, I'll judge it for myself and I'll tell you guys what I find. But it rips off some of the tropes and I guess storytelling in Lord of the Rings. Let me know. Discuss it in the comments because I will definitely read it. But that is a common criticism that I see on Book Talk, and I would like to read it for myself to be able to draw comparisons. Anyway, wow, Night of the Seven Kingdoms. It's just incredible. And the way, I mean, they fit so much into 30 minutes, and it also goes to show that you don't need to make every single TV episode an hour. It does not need to be an hour. Because at the end of these 30-minute episodes, they have managed to tell so much story, and I'm thirsty for more. It's like, how was that 30 minutes? I just started the episode. But that's fantastic because I cannot wait for the next episode. Dunk, Dunk, Sir Duncan the Tall. I genuinely love this show. And I was nervous. I was like, I don't see any women in the major cast. I don't see any women. Like, I would like to see a woman lead. But I do love this show. Okay. And I'll just leave it at that. And I haven't read the novella, which I probably, of course, I have to now. Anyway, love the show. Think they're doing amazing things with it. Gossip Girl. It's interesting going back and watching it because I know who Gossip Girl is. And I'm watching it and I'm like, they were careless with how that reveal feels like, okay, sure. Like they didn't really care to hide it or not. They didn't care to make sure that everything he does aligns with that story of him being Gossip Girl. You know, like there are certain scenes where, yeah, he's addicted to it or he's on his laptop typing it or whatever. But then I'm like, there are other things where a blast would go out and he's playing stupid. You know, he's what? And I'm like, I don't know. I need to finish Gossip Girl because there's no fucking way that Dan is that. For a character who is so insufferably holier than thou, I like watching him stumble and fall, I will say. I remember season one when I started watching Gossip Girl as a high schooler. I was addicted to Dan Humphrey, bitch. I wanted him so bad. I wanted him, I wanted Nate, and I wanted Chuck Bass. And then through it all, by the way, Chuck Bass, horrible character. Horrible, horrible character. And I understand they tried to give him death. Girl, horrible character. But him and Blair are made for each other. And then I kept thinking, when do they end up together? And now I'm on season three and they're like not talking. And I'm like, and I don't give a fuck about Dan and Serena, girl. Just break up. Just break up. You were never going to be with her. And by the way, you both have fucking issues. And by the way, you're 17. So I'm rewatching it and I'm like, so much of this story is just over and over and over. Let's get back together. Let's break up. Let's get back together. Let's break up. I would like something new. I do appreciate, I forgot the whole thing about Nate's dad was like a cokehead and was embezzling and like fled the country. I mean, some rich, that's real rich people shit. Rich people, a rich dad abandons family for selfish reasons because he just can't stop. And then he goes to prison. And that all, I just like, oh, I forgot about all this. I think I stopped watching around season three because I'm at a point now where I'm like, I don't remember this. And they're all about to go to college. I don't remember them being in college. So we'll see. But I will say I was very excited season one, season two. Now I'm at season three and I'm like, I'm over it. What's new? Okay, guys, the Winter Olympics. Everyone needs to get more Italian right now. Everyone needs to feel, do something Italian today, okay? Make some bruschetta, maybe eat a tomato, maybe cook something with 100% extra virgin olive oil, maybe watch any Anthony Bourdain episode of him in Italy, okay? Cook a Roman dish, read a Wikipedia article about the Statue of David. Everyone do one Italian thing today, just do it, okay? I've been thinking a lot about the Winter Olympics. Every single sport in the Winter Olympics is kind of rich people activities, which I think is a bit funny. It's a bit inaccessible. And so I've been brainstorming ways of, if the Winter Olympics were ever held in Broski Nation, which we are in talks to host, but that's a whole thing. You know, we'd have to build the stadiums and build the structures. And like, where is that funding coming from? I don't know. I'll have to get a loan. But probably, you know, probably in the 2030s, we will be hosting. So you guys can prepare for that. I probably will have to demolish some of your homes to build the stadium. But I'm sure you guys will not mind because, yay! Heated rivalry! They'll be playing hockey. And we're going to have a special version of hockey in the Broski Nation Olympics that's kind of like gay sex hockey. We're going to make gay sex hockey. And that'll be launching in the 2030s. So, you know, we'll kind of give you details of how you can enroll, who can participate, will it be televised, you know, that kind of thing. But just kind of stay tuned for now. I really don't have any updates. I've been thinking a lot about what sports should we introduce? Because like I said, the Winter Olympics lean a bit towards like, if you weren't raised skiing in the Alps in the summertime, how would you ever get into some of those activities? Also, if you don't live in a cold climate, how do you have access to practice these sports? Okay. I would like to introduce some winter themed activities that we can make competitive and enter into the Olympics. Maybe not the 2028 Olympics, but definitely, like I said, the 2030s. Here are my ideas. Let's move some of the activities indoors. It's cold. No one wants to be outside. They're freezing, guys. Everyone's cold. Let's go indoors. Let's light a fire and let's have a chili cook-off, okay? Olympic chili cook-off. We are testing taste, we're testing presentation, and we're testing inventiveness of flavor and spice, okay? Number two, I really like the idea, and of course we would schedule this after the chili cook-off. We would do fastest butt wiping competition. We would do Olympic butt wiping. And that would be involved, what would be involved in that is toilet paper versus dude wipe. And it doesn't have to be a dude wipe. It can just be a butt wipe. Fastest butt wiper. And we would put those in tandem because it's impressive. And I think a lot could be learned. After that, I think what would come about is fastest reading comprehension. I'd like to get a bunch of people in a room. Again, ski lodge, maybe around a fire. Everyone's got a nice warm beverage. Fastest reading comprehension. Whoever can read a 5-page story, hit a bell, and perfectly explain to me what they just read and be able to answer follow-up questions about it. okay? We need to bring back testing skills that matter. And I'm not saying that athletics and athleticism doesn't matter. It does, okay? It's part of what makes us beautifully human. But I think reading comprehension actually should be tested first. I think we should start there. And then we can move into, you know, who can do a spin in the air. And I can't do a spin in the air. I'm not looking down my nose at it. But I am saying maybe we should be practicing both at the same time. Who can wipe their butt the fastest? Who can eat 100 hot dogs in 10 minutes? Who can read? Who has the fastest reading comprehension? And who can ice skate and spin? These are just things that I am brainstorming. And another one that I think could be, it's similar to curling, maybe. And I do like to watch curling because what the hell are you guys doing? How do you get into curling? My dad was an Olympic curler. He did what? How do you get into that? I think it's fun. I love to watch it. But like, wow. I would like to suggest Olympic level scraping the ice off your windshield in the morning before work. You're late for work. You come outside. You're like, I got to go. Oh, fuck. I forgot to warm up the car. Ice on the windshield. Who can scrape that shit the fastest? And who can kick the tire and have the ice and snow kick off it the fastest? Are you guys following me? I know it gets to that point in the episode where you're like, what the hell is she talking about? Does anyone give a shit? Because I'm really introducing some great ideas here. Everyone get Italian right now. And also we need to introduce butt wiping into the Olympics. And I have more, don't worry. How about Jacob Elordi lookalike competition at the Olympics? How about Shane Hollander, Ilya Romanov lookalike competition at the Olympics? That should be an Olympic grade sport. That should be an Olympic grade activity. How about Paul Mescal lookalike competition? Has anyone thought about that? We'll get that going again when we host it in Broski Nation. And yes, we will build a stadium for that. We'll build a stadium to have all the Jacob Elordi lookalikes go sit in your seat until you are called. Okay? Until you are called, I do not want to hear from you. Go sit down. Because you have to talk to them like that sometimes. Men don't listen. Men don't listen and they wander and they do what they want. Sit down. Okay? I have not called your ticket. Yeah, those are some things that I'm thinking of introducing. Because love the Winter Olympics, love the Olympics in general. But yeah, I do think it's time to switch up some of the sports. Let's look up what are the most recently added Winter Olympic sports. Milano Cortina. What the hell is skeleton? Alpine skiing, biathlon. Is that where bi people go in the bobsleigh? Cross-country skiing, curling, figure skating, freestyle skiing, ice hockey, luge, Nordic combined. What the hell is Nordic combined, bro? Is that skiing? Cross-country skiing and ski jumping. Short track speed skating. Now that shit's crazy. Why do they all have big butts? Why do speed skaters have big butts? And they're hunched over. In what position are you hunched over and like clenching your butt? Or I guess it's the power that you need to, like, push off with each skate. Like, your glutes are really getting... They all have big, big old butts. And I love that for them. I just wasn't expecting it, but it does make sense. Skeleton, ski jumping, ski mountaineering, snowboard, speed skating. Okay, I would like to look into what the hell skeleton... What is that? Skeleton is one of the oldest winter sports. Oh, this is the shit where they're on their bellies. Like, how do you even control the shit? How do you get into this? And surely this is all based on, like, are you heavy or are you light? Right? Is it, like, the way you angle your head? I bet all of that. It's like F1. It goes into how well you do, how fast you go. What if I land on my back and then you push me down the mountain and we can see who does it faster? What? Skeleton is one of the oldest winter sports in existence. Unlike luge, where athletes lay on a sledge on their backs, skeleton racers tackle the track face down. I'm scared. Here's everything you need to know about the skeleton competition at Milano Cortina 2026.
Diving headfirst. No brakes, just a sled. Step into the world of skeleton. There are three Olympic events. A women's and a men's race, and brand new skeleton mixed team race. All races start with a 30-meter sprint. Full power.
You have to run to that shit? Okay, wait. I have to lock into skeleton. This shit's crazy. This shit is crazy. You have to run to your position? What if you trip? Oh my God, that'd be so humiliating. Like, girl, go! Get up! Get up!
Then a clean launch onto the sled. Head low, just centimeters from the ice. Tucked in our aerodynamic suit to maintain speed. Our sled may look small, but it weighs up to 35 kilograms for women and 43 kilograms for men, helping us stay in control and fast. Once we get going, we steer with our shoulders, knees, and toes. Tiny movements that might look invisible to the eye. In high-speed turns, we can experience up to 5 G-forces.
Fuck, bitch! What the hell are you talking about? In corners, they can experience up to 5 G's of force. That's like a spacecraft or a roller coaster. What are you talking about? And you're controlling that shit? They're on a sled. And they're controlling it with their shoulders and their knees and their toes? There has to be an easier way to compete where your head isn't 4 centimeters from the fucking ice. Maybe I need to try skeleton. You know what? I get this, though. I bet it hurts your neck, but at least you can see where you're going. If I was laying on my back in the luge, I literally would be like, whatever happens to me just happens. Because ultimately, it's out of your control. Oh, my God. Did y'all see that clip of Colin? SNL Colin doing the luge? Or sorry, bobsledding. He said it was the scariest moment of his life. He stated he thought his bones were going to fly off his body. Like, yeah, actually, what the fuck? How do you get in to a sport that is that dangerous? Shooting your body, the only one you get, mind you, down a sled, down a chute. I don't get it. I don't get it, but I respect it, guys. I'm serious.
We're aiming for clean lines in every transition. We get 4 runs down the track. The fastest combined time determines the winners. No bumps or late corrections. A perfect run doesn't guarantee gold, but without one, you don't have a shot. Feel the speed at the Olympic Winter Games Milano Cortina 2020.
Honestly, that just blew my freaking mind. I know what I'm doing later. I'm going on the Olympics website. And I'm watching every single descriptor of every single sport. So I think that alone suggests to me that we need to change some things up because it should not be that dangerous. And when we do it in Broski Nation, I'm going to do it where you can't go that fast. And I'm going to put up human bumpers. I'm going to put up like bowling safeguard bumpers. Because slow down, you're making me nervous. Has anyone ever died at the Winter Olympics? Has anyone died at the Winter Olympics? In the history of the Winter Olympics, 4 athletes and at least 1 team official have died during the games or their immediate lead up. While athlete deaths are rare, all 4 recorded fatalities occurred during training or practice runs rather than official medal competitions. Oh my God. 1964. Someone died during a training run 2 weeks before the games. 1964 as well, alpine skiing. A 19-year-old from Australia died after striking a tree during a practice run just days before the opening ceremony. Someone from Switzerland in 1992 died after colliding with a snow grooming vehicle during a warm-up 1 day before the closing ceremonies. And someone in 2010 from Georgia passed away during a final training run on the day of the opening ceremony in Vancouver. That is just like, I can't. Oh, it's just so gruesome. And you're moving that fast. Anyway.
Okay, let's move on to something a bit nicer.
This episode is sponsored by SeatGeek. With over 35 million downloads, y'all know SeatGeek is the number 1 rated ticketing app. There's more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. There are so many artists going on tour in 2026. Bruno Mars, Lady Gaga, BTS, Ariana Grande, Zara Larsson, Cardi B, Chris Stapleton, Alex Warren, Demi Lovato, Olivia Dean, so many more. Grab your tickets now. I love using SeatGeek. These Ariana Grande tickets, it really is do or die, girl. Like, I'm sorry. I have to be at one of these shows, and SeatGeek is going to help make my wish a reality. And SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good. Red, you guessed it, means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. Concert season is right around the corner. To make it even better, you can use code BROSKI2026 for 10% off your SeatGeek tickets. That's 10% off tickets with promo code BROSKI2026. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thanks, SeatGeek! I wanted to do some Googling here with you today. I wanted to look into the origin of cuss words. Because here I always have this idea of, oh, I probably know where that came from, and then I never look it up. I do know some words have a horrific history. Motherfucker has a horrific history. I mean, like, horrific. But words like shit and damn, even the word hell, I want to know where it comes from. Where do curse... And am I immature for saying cuss word? Why do we say cuss word? Where do curse words come from? What the cuss? Discover Magazine. Let's look on Discover Magazine. This is from 2023. And obviously I need to pick up this book. The words that come to fill that role. Okay, wait. Simply put, swearing is taboo language. Particular words that certain people deem unacceptable in specific settings within a given culture. The words that come to fill that role come from certain places in the human experience, says Benjamin Bergen, a linguist and cognitive scientist at the University of California, San Diego. I need to talk to Mr. Benjamin. He's the author of What the F? What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves. They tend to describe things that are themselves taboo. In Latin, the word profanus translates to outside the temple, signifying words that desecrate sacred precepts. As such, words in English like holy, hell, and goddamn, or even names of religious figures like Jesus Christ, become swears when they're used accordingly, even if they're pretty tame by today's standards. Beyond religion, profanity can also come from language involving sex and sexual acts, naturally. As well as bodily functions. In the latter category, you can find words describing vomit, urine, and of course, feces. In certain cultures, death and disease can even become fodder for profane language. And what is fodder? Fodder definition. Food, especially dried hay or feed for cattle and other livestock. No, I didn't know that. That's cool. In Dutch, for example, a long list of expletives are derived from the names of diseases, like the extremely offensive kankerlijer, which literally translates to cancer sufferer. Damn. It's the same general phenomenon in all cases. A taboo about the world becomes a taboo about the word. Lastly, there are slurs. Among the most offensive of all profanity, according to several studies that rank the offensiveness of English swear words. These derogatory terms refer to members of groups perceived as being defined by their race, gender, ethnicity, and sexual orientation, among others. And according to Bergen, the prominence of slurs in the U.S. is on the rise, naturally. There's very clear empirical evidence that not only is there more of this type of language, but it's also judged to be more offensive, at least by younger Americans. I would agree with that. And I saw this thing that basically was saying, I forget the term they used, but it was like a far right extinction bubble, like the popping of the extinction bubble, which is basically like, it feels like there's a rise, but it's because they're backed into a corner. And it's because it's almost like a child being punished and like trying to act out because they know what's coming, you know, which is like there's no room for that language and people like that. And so, yeah, they called it an extinction bubble pop. And it kind of put shit into perspective for me of like, yeah, it feels like it's getting worse, but really I think it's because it's about to get better. I don't know. Maybe that's just hopeful thinking. Who knows? Modern obscenity was born during the Renaissance. During the Renaissance, swearing started to more closely resemble modern profanity. Terms that had simply been direct or descriptive during the Middle Ages, like the C word, surely not cunt, which could once be found in medical treatises describing anatomy, began to take over as the new swear words. Most of the bad words were around in the Middle Ages. They just weren't swear words. These swears, often sexual or scatological in nature, reached their peak offensiveness during the Victorian era. This is when profanities largely vanished from print and speech, and polite euphemisms took their place. The societal urge to veer away from anything deemed uncouth or explicit was so strong that even now banal words like leg and trouser were seen as taboo. What the fuck? Uh-oh, I'm tingling. Uh-oh, I love this shit and I love learning about it. What the hell? But in private, there were all these hints that by around 1860, people were swearing basically the same way that they are now. It just rarely made it into the record, but it's in court cases and pornography. Around the dawn of the 20th century, however, profanity became much more public. During World War I and World War II, wartime correspondents tried to faithfully report on what soldiers were doing and saying, from trenches to submarines, including all of the colorful language they used. As a result, swearing started to bleed into newspapers and books. At that point, they're saying fuck every other word. There's a quote from the era where someone says, "We knew it was serious if the sergeant didn't say, get your fucking rifle." Today, slurs are increasingly replacing other forms of profanity as the most shocking and offensive words in the English language. And while research suggests that the bulk of profanity is mostly harmless, even when used around children, slurs are a notable exception to this rule. Duh. Because it's like when it's being wielded, if anything else is kind of an emphatic expletive, you know, to express any range of emotion, a slur is a very intentional, harmful, like purposefully harmful use of language, a wielding of language where you know what those words mean. And you know the impact that those words have. The etymology of the top 7 curse words. This is from Scribendi.com. Here we go. This is what I wanted. Shit. The origin is the Old English shit. Diarrhea. Of Germanic origin, related to Dutch schitten and German scheißen verb. The Dutch and German words from whence shit came share the same meaning as the English word. That is, they all essentially mean poop or to poop. They don't mean to defecate, as that word is a bit too classy and non-vulgar to really reflect the meaning of shit. Some more interesting history for you. The words from which shit originates come from even older words meaning to part with, separate, or cut off. Even more interesting is the fact that the word shit actually used to be neutral with no vulgar connotations. That's so crazy how it morphs and changes. Like, why? Why did it morph? Of course, there are many other ways to use the word shit as an expletive. Here are some examples of contexts in which the word can be used. Thank you, Scribendi.com, for telling me. Here's what they've written. Don't touch my shit. This is a really shitty movie. Don't you dare give me that shit. He's behaving like a little shit. Oh no, I stepped in dog shit. It really is such a beautiful word. Like, it's so versatile. So much to do. Ooh, number 2, piss. Number 3, ass. Number 4, hell, damn, bitch, fuck. Let's start with piss. The origin, Middle English. From Old French. Everything's from Old French. Everything's from Old French. Or Arabic. The Old French pisser, pisser, probably of imitative origin. In keeping with our theme of bodily waste, we have piss. Who wrote this? A relatively mild swear word, but definitely not something you'd like your grandmother to hear you say. The origin story for this one's pretty boring, but here's another little tidbit for you. The Old French pisse seems to refer not to urine itself, but to that which dispels the urine. It essentially means one who pisses or that which pisses, meaning it can refer to either a person or a certain male appendage. As with shit, there are many creative ways to use piss as a swear word. Of course, piss off, I'm so pissed, I need to piss. Ass, Old English arse, of Germanic origin. Very crazy how Old English, I need to look into all that. Old English seems to be two major influences, Germanic and Old French. And what the hell is Old French? I wonder what documents were written in Old French. Because I know famously Beowulf was written in Old English, or Middle English, actually. Because Old English is a different language. Middle English is similar enough to current day English where we can do translations. But Old English feels like, yeah. It's related to the Dutch ars and German arsch. Depending on where you live, ass or arse may be the more common variant of this word. While this word doesn't refer to excretion itself, it does, of course, refer to the body part responsible for that particularly unpleasant function, and thus is the butt of many jokes and insults. A donkey is also known as an ass after its Latin subgenus name, Asinus. An ass is often used as an insult, essentially meaning a stupid or foolish person. I would say ass is more like rude. Like he's an ass. He's an asshole. Like he's mean and he's rude and he's selfish. Not stupid or foolish. This is completely separate from its bum-related meaning. It should be noted that while it's not at all insulting to call a donkey an ass, well, I would hate to offend the donkey. It would be quite rude to tell a donkey that it has a fat ass. All right, who wrote this? I'm over it. Whoever wrote that article is pissing me off, actually. Okay, guys, we learned so much today. Shit, ass, piss. Guys, if you want to watch the Broski Report or listen to it ad-free, I have a Patreon. You can pay a small monthly fee to listen to every single episode ad-free. If you want to do that, you can. If you don't want to do it, I'm not forcing you, okay? If you would like merchandise, you can go to broski.shop. We've got moomoos and we've got hoodies, okay? If you would like to listen to the official Broski Report playlist on Spotify, we've got that too. It's in the description. And might I suggest to add to that list, Peaky Blinders Green Chattin', okay? The song is called Puppet and it's fantastic and I love it. I want to plug Royal Court. And I want to plug specifically this week. Something's happening that I need you guys to just please just brace. Anyway, love you guys. I will talk to you next week, of course. I'm about to go to Ireland again, and I'm about to go to Paris again for Fashion Week. So I'm gonna pre-record some episodes if y'all don't mind. I feel horrible. I'm so sorry. I have to pre-record. But I love you guys. Please be good. Make good choices. And I will see you guys next week. I mean that. I love you. Goodbye.